אני אתחיל איתך, דיוויד מקובסקי. As I mentioned, you served as a delegate to the round of negotiations brokered by Secretary Kerry. So could you please elaborate on the U.S. role then and possibly in the future?
Okay. בוקר אור לכולכם. אני ברשותכם אדבר באנגלית, שלא עושה טעויות. Good morning, everyone. Gilly, it's an honor to be here with such distinguished panelists and such a distinguished audience. Look, I was asked to join, I should say also, a colleague, John Allen, who I think is an American icon, a real hero, was part of our team. We tried in nine, you know, this, you got to realize there were three major American efforts since the year 2000 to solve the whole thing. There was the 2000 at Camp David that, Gilly, you were a part of, with Ehud Barak and Bill Clinton and Yasser Arafat. There was the Annapolis process with Condoleezza Rice. And the third one was the Kerry effort, which I would think 9 months of intensive negotiation to see if we could essentially get what I would call the core conceptual bargain, five for five might be another way of calling it, believing if we could get a breakthrough on those issues, then we could deal with a lot of the details, because, boy, as this group knows more than anyone, there are a lot of details. I would say of the five for five, on two of the five, I saw the breakthrough. I could envisage it, and this has been said publicly. I'm not, on the issue of territory, when it came to the Israeli position, I don't want to get into details that I can't do, or refugees when it came to the Palestinian position. But on the other three issues, I would say we tried, if we couldn't do the front door, the side door, the window, the basement, the chimney. We didn't want it to say because of the lack of American creativity this failed. So those three issues, and Amos kind of touched on it last night in his remarks, were the issue of Jerusalem, the issue of mutual recognition, i.e. Jewish state, and the third issue being the one of security arrangements. If you read the literature of Gilly, your book in Hebrew, and Yossi and everyone else who wrote about 2000, the security arrangements should have been the easiest issue. But a lot of water, I guess, went under the Jordan River since then, and you had a second intifada, the Arab Spring aftermath, a meltdown of Arab states, and made everything harder. And again, I salute General Allen for all his efforts. The point here is that people say, oh, they just don't want peace, that's all. I don't think that's fair. Each side wants a deal, but on their terms. And the question is, on these three remaining issues, are there compromise solutions? And I think the INSS is very well positioned to deal with the security arrangements. Crucial. So of those, Secretary of Kerry was relentless. I think the history books will be much kinder to Secretary Kerry than the newspapers. I saw up close how devoted he was to make this two-state solution work. Now, without that, the question is, what do we do now? Clearly, from an American perspective, we look at the metrics, and the metrics look bad, and that the absence of progress has had consequences. We've seen a hardening on the Israeli side. I don't think I have to get into details with this audience. And we've seen a hardening on the Palestinian side. Look at Khalil Shikaki's latest polls, and I could just tick off. We just don't have a lot of time here. On all the key metrics of going in the other direction, support for violence, not believing in two-state solution, not believing anything is possible in 5 years. I could go through five or six metrics where it's gone backwards. So just to say we could put this issue in a freezer and 20 years we'll see, I think this is a mistake. We don't know if the PA will be there given the lack of support for security cooperation. So, and if you care about Israel, and Prime Minister Netanyahu went to Herzl's grave and said the status quo is bad if we want to be a Jewish state. That's the Prime Minister's words, not mine. So otherwise it slides to a binational reality. What can we do now? This is my final point. And that is, what are the options going forward? International, regional, local. The international idea that Gilly alluded to is saying, here, have the Security Council put forward terms of reference. Could it be, could the U.S. put this forward maybe after the November elections? A lot of key moves have been done in the U.S. Peace process issue between that November elections and when an administration leaves office. It's possible, but there's risks, too. It could be a magnet or it could be a repellent. It could lead the communities to come together, but it might take 5 or 10 years, and you don't know what could happen between then and now. It could have the possibility of serving as terms of reference. The negative side, it could be a new baseline for defiance. No, we won't go to that with the international community puts that forward. The second idea is a regional conference of sorts that we hear popular in Israel. But frankly, I think that the world is going to be stuck on the same points. And the Arabs won't give political cover unless you find solutions to these three issues. You're stuck with the same questions. My colleagues might have other ideas. I think a third issue Gilly mentioned in his opening remarks is at least starting the separating between peoples. Yes, regulated in economic interaction, no question, but divide the ideological question from the security question, where the IDF stays and you do this in phases. I think these are options all open, perhaps to a new administration. If we have time, I'd like to think of things we could do this year. I just don't want to take up too much time.
Thank you. Toda. David, in light of the criticism on the way that Secretary Kerry has put the permanent status as the only and sole objective of the 9 months negotiations, would you say first, how do you look at it in hindsight today? And secondly, why won't the United States lay out the parameters or the framework that you've produced during those negotiations as an anchor for future negotiations or on the United Nations Security Council table in order to be discussed, rather than to have a Jordanian or a French or a New Zealand initiated resolution? Okay.
Yossi's point and, your question. I mean, I think you're hearing from at least three of the four of us our doubts that there can be a two-state solution in one go. Yossi, Moshe, and myself have mentioned, the issue of security in the short term, and that it's more, I think, a longer-term aspiration, perhaps, that you can solve all the problems. But in the Middle East, when it's all or nothing, it tends to be nothing. And I think that is, that's a question. I think with Secretary Kerry, and he made the decision, before Martin Indyk came on board, before I came on board, he says both leaders say they want a two-state solution, and the window was closing on that two states. And that was the decision he made, believing that, again, and I think with some, correctness, that stagnation leads to radicalization. I think when I joined the team, I was pleasantly surprised, and I think the public here would be pleasantly surprised that, like I said, on two of the five issues, the leaders, I saw the way for them to bridge their differences. The thesis that the secretary was trying to explore was, if America puts 9 months into this, finally we will know that with enough American energy and focus, we will test the proposition that the problem is whether the U.S. is willing to put that kind of resources in it. I think we have. I think we now know what the differences are more than before. It's easy for me in retrospect to say, I would have done it differently. That's easy. But, I have to deal with the pragmatic reality. We are where we are. And the question for me now is where do we, go from here? Your point about do you release the framework, I think, is a fair question. But I think it's complex. First of all, we made a commitment to these parties to confidentiality. America takes that commitment seriously to the leaders. We don't violate that, with equanimity. You don't see any leaked versions that have come out in the newspapers or anything like that. Point two, I think you have an issue that there were moments, and I talked to some of my colleagues before I appeared here. I thought I might get asked that. There were moments where there was more than one draft in order to elicit a response, and then the question is, what draft do you release? And the third point is that the political context has changed pretty radically, and the compromises that will be made might be less understood today than more understood. I do believe that if we get back to these issues, that will be the starting point. Look, I'm not saying, you know, nobody made mistakes here. I think everyone made mistakes in the Kerry period. I think on the Israel side, you know, I tracked on the settlements thing. Yes, most of the settlement tenders were within, we call the blocks, but much of the planning was outside the blocks, and that is something that was seen by the Palestinian side as bad faith. I think on the Palestinian side, the biggest mistake was that they didn't get back to our president on March 17, 2014, which I think will go down in history as a key moment when we wanted a response, and they didn't get back to us. And I think with respect, you know, the United States did a lot of great things. If I had to be very self-reflective about our mistake was was not calling them on that and not just saying they're too weak to criticize. Because if you want a deal, everybody has to be accountable. And if you don't hold each side accountable, then you can't make a deal with that person. So I'm not saying mistakes weren't made. And I do want to say one thing in the U.S.-Israel context, because there were some attacks on Dan Shapiro. I heard the speech. From what I saw, there was nothing different than what administration officials have been saying. I could tell you personally about Dan. There's nobody who works day and night more to bring the U.S. and Israel closer than Dan Shapiro. I saw it from my time in government. I see it from my time outside of government. And so I hope that this context is taken in a broader sense, and you know, there's not a personalization of these attacks, because he's a great civil servant and a real asset to the United States and to the cause of peace and to the cause of U.S.-Israel relations.
Thank you. Toda, I'll get back to you in a minute, but you had two fingers.
No, again, I said respectfully, maybe I wasn't understood in my remarks. I said whenever in the Middle East it's all or nothing, it's nothing. And I also heard from Yossi and also a belief that the security issue, you know, is the toughest. And I said that, you know, I don't know if we could solve all the problems in one go. Because you put your point about security is an important point. And it seems to me, though, what in America isn't understood, and I could tell you, I've visited 110 American campuses. I don't know if anyone has visited more in the last few years to discuss the BDS phenomenon and the like. But in my humble view, there are things that Israel can do that has nothing to do with security. And that's the part in America that isn't understood. You point about the economics, and you're right, 100% right on the economic issues. But it would also, America, people don't understand, if you say you're not going to settle beyond the security barrier, for example, and you would show there would at least be political space, two entities for both people, in America, they don't see how that hurts Israeli security. The IDF is there. The Shabak, the Shin Bet, the internal security is there. You know, but some sense of direction. I agree with you about Abu Mazen, but I think you would also agree respectfully that we're at a very critical time of transition. I was in Ramallah three times this past week. And the transition, it's clear he's in the last chapter. And people are talking about him much more openly. And the question is, when this man leaves the stage, is the legacy going to be, as the succession is fought out, and it won't be fought out in one day, that nonviolence is repudiated, discredited? You know, people say, we tried that, didn't work. Now, I could say, here all, if we were here for 5 days, I could say, here are all the mistakes that were made on all sides, including the Palestinian side. But we don't have that time. But the point is, I do think at this critical juncture of timing, we have an interest that the legacy of nonviolence is not repudiated. Also, the issue of binationalism that the Prime Minister mentioned at Herzl's grave. These, to me, are issues that are, you can do short of the security issue, which might be the last issue, which will take a long time, given how unstable the Middle East is right now. So I just worry we should avoid the trap to say, if you can't do everything, do nothing. That, to me, is the trap that Israel should avoid. Israel's always been smart, in my view, cultivating great powers from Herzl to Chaim Weizmann to Jabotinsky to Ben-Gurion, understanding we as an Israeli, you could say, wants that great power relationship. That means doing as much as you can, even if you can't do it all. I think there's a way to avoid the all or nothing trap.
Thank you.